The elemental, being afraid in its curious semi-conscious way, will endeavor to transfer its fear to the, page 111, man who is jolting him out of the rearrangement, in order to deter him from doing so. Hence one reason why it is so useful to have knowledge of these matters before death. If the rearrangement, or shelling, has already occurred, it is still possible for the condition to be broken up by someone who wishes to help the man, and for the man to be thus set free to work on the whole astral plane, instead of being confined to one level. Page 112. Chapter 13. After death life, principles. It cannot be too strongly insisted that it is not found that any sudden change takes place in man at death. On the contrary, he remains after death exactly what he was before, except that he no longer has a physical body. He has the same intellect, the same disposition, the same virtues and vices. The loss of the physical body no more makes him a different man than would the removal of an overcoat. Moreover, the conditions in which he finds himself are those which his own thoughts and desires have already created for him. There is no reward or punishment from outside, but only the actual result of what he has himself done, and said, and thought, while living in the physical world. As we proceed with our description of the astral life after death, it will be recognized that the true facts correspond with considerable accuracy with the Catholic conception of purgatory, and the Hades or underworld of the Greeks. The poetic idea of death as a universal leveler is a mere absurdity born of ignorance, for, as a matter of fact, in the vast majority of cases, the loss of the physical body makes no difference whatever in the character or intellect of the person. And there are therefore as many different varieties of intelligence among the so-called dead as among the living. This is the first and the most prominent fact to appreciate, that after death there is no strange new life, but a continuation, under certain changed conditions, of the present physical plane life. So much is this the case that when a man first arrives on the astral plane after physical death, he by no means always knows that he is dead, and even when, page 113, he does realize what has happened to him, he does not always at first understand how the astral world differs from the physical. In some cases people consider the very fact that they are still conscious, an absolute proof that they have not died, and this in spite of the much vaunted belief in the immortality of the soul. If a man has never heard of astral plane life before, he is likely to be more or less disturbed by the totally unexpected conditions in which he finds himself. Finally, he accepts these conditions, which he does not understand, thinking them necessary and inevitable. Looking out upon the new worlds, at the first glance he would probably see very little difference, and he would suppose himself to be looking upon the same world as before. As we have seen, each degree of astral matter is attracted by the corresponding degree of physical matter. If, therefore, we imagined the physical world to be struck out of existence, without any other change being made, we should still have a perfect replicate of it in astral matter. Consequently, a man on the astral plane would still see the walls, furniture, people, etc., to which he was accustomed, outlined as clearly as ever by the densest type of astral matter. If, however, he examined such objects closely, he would perceive that all the particles were visibly in rapid motion, instead of only invisibly as on the physical plane. But, as few men observe closely, a man who dies often does not know at first that any change has come over him. Thus many, especially in Western countries, find it difficult to believe that they are dead, simply because they still see, hear, feel and think. Realization of what has happened will probably dawn gradually, as the man discovers that though he can see his friends, he cannot always communicate with them. Sometimes he speaks to them, and they do not seem to hear, he tries to touch them, and finds that he can make no impression upon them. Even then, for some time he may persuade himself that he is dreaming, for at other times, when his friends are, page 114, asleep, they are perfectly conscious of him and talk with him as of old. By degrees the man begins to realize the differences between his present life and that which he lived in the physical world. For example, he soon finds that for him all pain and fatigue have passed away. He also finds that in the astral world desires and thoughts express themselves in visible forms, though these are composed mostly of the finer matter of the plane. As his life proceeds, these become more and more prominent. Moreover, though a man on the astral plane cannot usually see the physical bodies of his friends, yet he can and does see the physical bodies of his friends, and consequently knows their feelings and emotions. He will not necessarily be able to follow in detail the events of their physical life, but he would at once be aware of such feelings as love or hate, jealousy or envy, as these would be expressed through the astral bodies of his friends. Thus, although the living often suppose themselves to have lost the dead are never for a moment under the impression that they have lost the living. A man, in fact, living in his astral body after death is more readily and deeply influenced by the feelings of his friends in the physical world than when he was on earth, because he has no physical body to deaden his perceptions. A man on the astral plane does not usually see the whole astral counterpart of an object, but the portion of it which belongs to the particular sub-plane upon which he is at the time. Moreover, a man by no means always recognizes with any certainty the astral counterpart of a physical body even when he sees it. He usually requires considerable experience before he can clearly identify objects, and any attempt that he makes to deal with them is liable to be vague and uncertain. Examples of this are often seen in haunted houses, where, page 115, stone throwing, or vague, clumsy movements of physical matter take place. Frequently, not realizing that he is free from the necessity to work for a living, to eat, sleep, etc., a man after death may continue to prepare and consume meals, created entirely by his imagination, or even to build for himself a house in which to live. A case is recorded of a man who built for himself a house, stone by stone, each stone being separately created by his own thought. He might, of course, with the same amount of effort have created the whole house at once. He was eventually led to see that as the stones had no weight, the conditions were different from those obtaining in physical life, and so he was induced to investigate further. Similarly, a man new to the conditions of astral life may continue to enter and depart from a room by a door or window, not realizing that he can pass through the wall just as easily. For the same reason he may walk upon the earth when he might just as well float through the air. A man who has already during earth life acquainted himself, by reading or otherwise, with the general conditions of astral life, naturally finds himself after death on ground more or less familiar, and consequently he should not be at a loss to know what to do with himself. Even an intelligent appreciation of occult teaching on this subject, as experience has shown, is of enormous advantage to a man after death, while it is a considerable advantage for a man merely to have heard of the conditions of astral life, even though he may have regarded such teachings as one of many hypotheses, and may not have followed them up further. In the case of others, not so fortunately situated as to their knowledge of the astral world, their best plan is to take stock of their position, endeavor to see the nature of the life before them, and how they can make the best use of it. In addition, they would do well to consult some experienced friend. Page 116. The condition of life referred to above constitute Kamaloka, literally the place or world of karma or desire, the limbus of scholastic theology. In general terms, Kamaloka is a region peopled by intelligent and semi-intelligent entities. It is crowded with many types and forms of living things, as diverse from each other as a blade of grass is different from a tiger is different from a man, there being of course, many other entities living there besides deceased human beings, see chapters 19-21. It interpenetrates the physical world, and is interpenetrated by it. But, as the states of matter in the two worlds differ, they coexist without the entities of either world being conscious of those of the other. Only under abnormal circumstances can consciousness of each other's presence arise among the inhabitants of the two worlds. Kamaloka is thus not divided off as a distinct locality, but is separated off from the rest of the astral plane by the conditions of consciousness of the entities who belong to it. These entities being human beings, who have shaken off the dense and etheric bodies, but who have not yet disentangled themselves from karma, that is, the passional and emotional nature. This state is also called Pretaloka, a Preta being a human being who has lost his physical body, but is still encumbered with the vesture of his animal nature. The Kamalokic condition is found on each subdivision of the astral plane. Many who die are at first in a condition of considerable uneasiness, and others of positive terror. When they encounter the thought forms which they and their kind have for centuries been making, thoughts of a personal devil, an angry and cruel deity, and eternal punishment, they are often reduced to a pitiable state of fear, and may spend long periods of acute mental suffering before they can free themselves from the fatal influence of such foolish and utterly false conceptions. It ought, however, in fairness to be mentioned that, page 117, it is only among what are called Protestant communities that this terrible evil assumes its most aggravated form. The great Roman Catholic Church, with its doctrine of purgatory, approaches much more nearly to a true conception of the astral plane, and its devout members, at any rate, realize that the state in which they find themselves shortly after death is merely a temporary one, and it is their business to endeavor to raise themselves out of it as soon as may be by intense spiritual aspiration, while they accept any suffering which may come to them as necessary for the wearing away of the imperfections in their character, before they can pass to higher and brighter spheres. Thus we see that although men should have been taught by their religion what to expect, and how to live on the astral plane, in most cases this has not been done. Consequently, a good deal of explanation is needed regarding the new world in which they find themselves. But, after death, exactly as before it, the are few who attain to an intelligent appreciation of the fact of evolution and who, by understanding something of their position, know how to make the best of it. Today, large numbers of people, both living and dead, are engaged in looking after and helping those who have died in ignorance of the real nature of the after-death life, vide chapter 28 on invisible helpers. Unfortunately, however, on the astral plane, as on the physical, the ignorant are rarely ready to profit by the advice or example of the wise. To a man who has, before he dies physically, already acquainted himself with the real conditions of life on the astral plane, one of the most pleasant characteristics of that life is its restfulness and complete freedom from those imperious necessities, such as eating and drinking, which burden physical life. On the astral plane, a man is really free, free to do whatever he likes, and to spend his time as he chooses. As already indicated, a man who has died physically, is steadily withdrawing into himself. The whole cycle, page 118, of life and death may be likened to an ellipse, of which only the lowest portion passes into the physical world. During the first portion of the cycle, the ego is putting himself forth into matter. The central point of the curve should be a middle point in physical life, when the force of the ego has expended its outward rush and turns to begin the long process of withdrawal. Thus each physical incarnation may be regarded as a putting of the ego, whose habitat is the higher part of the mental plane, outwards into the lower planes. The ego puts the soul out, as though it were an investment, and expects his investment to draw back added experience, which will have developed new qualities within him. The portion of the life after death spent on the astral plane is therefore definitely in the period of withdrawal back towards the ego. During the latter part of the physical life, the man's thoughts and interests should be less and less directed towards merely physical matters. Similarly, during the astral life, he should pay less and less attention to the lower astral matter, out of which counterparts of physical objects are composed, and occupy himself with the higher matter, out of which desire and thought forms are made. It is not so much that he has changed his location in space, though this is partially true, see chapter 14, as that he has moved the center of his interest. Hence the counterpart of the physical world which he has left gradually fades from his view, and his life becomes more and more a life in the world of thought. His desires and emotions still persist, and consequently, owing to the readiness with which astral matter obeys his desires and thoughts, the form surrounding him will be very largely the expression of his own feelings, the nature of which mainly determines whether his life is one of happiness or of discomfort. Although we are not in this book dealing with that portion of the life after death which is spent in the heaven world, that is, on the mental plane, nevertheless, in order to understand fully what is happening to the page 119, astral body on the astral plane, it is desirable to bear in mind that the astral life is largely an intermediate stage in the whole cycle of life and death, a preparation for the life on the mental plane. As we have seen, soon after physical death, the astral body is set free, expressed from the point of view consciousness, karma manas is set free. From this, that portion of lower manas, which is not inextricably entangled with karma, gradually frees itself, taking with it such of its experience as fit for assimilation by the higher mental body. Meanwhile, that portion of the lower manas which still remains entangled with karma, gives to the astral body a somewhat confused consciousness, a broken memory of the events of the life just closed. If the emotions and passions were strong, and the mental element weak, then the astral body will be strongly energized, and will persist for a considerable time on the astral plane. It will also show a considerable amount of consciousness, due to the mental matter entangled with it. If, on the other hand, the earth life just closed was characterized by mentality and purity rather than by passion, the astral body will be poorly energized, will be but a pale simulacrum of the man, and will disintegrate and perish comparatively rapidly. Page 120. Chapter 14. The After-Death Life, Particulars. In considering the conditions of a man's astral life, there are two prominent factors to be taken into account. 1. The length of time which he spends on any particular sub-plane. 2. The amount of his consciousness upon it. The length of time depends upon the amount of matter belonging to that sub-plane which he has built into his astral body during physical life. He will necessarily remain upon that sub-plane until the matter corresponding to it has dropped out of his astral body. During physical life, as we have already seen, the quality of the astral body which he builds for himself is directly determined by his passions, desires and emotions, and indirectly by his thoughts, as well as by his physical habits, food, drink, cleanliness, continence, etc. A coarse and gross astral body, resulting from a coarse and gross life, will cause the man to be responsive only to lower astral vibrations, so that after death he will find himself bound to the astral plane during the long and slow process of the disintegration of the astral body. On the other hand, a refined astral body, created by a pure and refined life, will make the man unresponsive to the low and coarse vibrations of the astral world, and responsive only to its higher influences. Consequently, he will experience much less trouble in his post-mortem life, and his evolution will proceed rapidly and easily. The amount of consciousness depends upon the degree to which he has vivified and used the matter of the particular sub-plane in his physical life. Page 121. If during earth life the animal nature was indulged and allowed to run riot, if the intellectual and spiritual parts were neglected or stifled, then the astral or desire body will persist for a long time after physical death. If, on the other hand, desire has been conquered and bridled during earth life, if it has been purified and trained into subservience to the higher nature, then there will be little to energize the astral body, and will quickly disintegrate and dissolve away. The average man, however, has by no means freed himself from all lower desires before death, and consequently it takes a long period of more or less fully conscious life on the various sub-planes of the astral plane to allow the forces which he has generated to work themselves out, and thus release the higher ego. The general principle is that when the astral body has exhausted its attractions to one level, the greater part of its grosser particles fall away, and it finds itself in affinity with a somewhat higher state of existence. Its specific gravity, as it were, is constantly decreasing, and so it steadily rises from the dense to the lighter strata, pausing only when it is exactly balanced for a time. To be upon any given subplane in the astral world is to have developed sensitiveness of those particles in the astral body which belong to that subplane. To have perfect vision on the astral plane means to have developed sensitiveness in all particles of the astral body, so that all the subplanes are simultaneously visible. A man who has led a good and pure life, whose strongest feelings and aspirations have been unselfish and spiritual, will have no attractions to the astral plane, and will, if entirely left alone, find little to keep him upon it, or to awaken him into activity even during the comparatively short period of his stay. His earthly passions have been subdued during physical life, and the force of his will having been directed into higher channels, there is but little energy, page 122, of lower desire to be worked out on the astral plane. Consequently, his stay there will be very short, and most probably he will have little more than a dreamy half-consciousness, until he sinks into the sleep during which his higher principles finally free themselves from the astral body, and enter upon the blissful life of the heaven world. Expressed more technically, during physical life Manas has purified karma with which it was interwoven, so that after death all that is left of karma is a mere residuum, easily shaken off by the withdrawing ego. Such a man therefore would have little consciousness on the astral plane. It is quite possible that a man might, as a result of his previous incarnations, possess a good deal of coarse astral matter in his astral body. Even if he has been so brought up, and has so conducted his life, that he has not vivified that coarse matter, and although much of it may have dropped out and been replaced by finer materials, yet there may be quite a good deal left. Consequently, the man would have to remain on a low level of the astral plane for some time, until in fact the coarse matter had all dropped out. But, as the coarse matter would not be vivified, he would have little consciousness and would practically sleep through the period of his sojourn there. There is a point known as the critical point between every pair of substates of matter. Ice may be raised to a point at which the least increment of heat will change it into liquid, water may be raised to a point at which the least increment of heat will change it into vapor. And so each substate of astral matter may be carried to a point of fineness at which any additional refinement would transform it into the next higher substate. If a man has done this for every substate of matter in his astral body, so it is purified to the last possible degree of delicacy, then the first touch of disintegrating force shatters its cohesion and resolves it into its original condition, leaving him free at once to pass on to the next, page 123, subplane. His passage through the astral plane will thus be of inconceivable rapidity, and he will flash through the plane practically instantaneously to the higher state of the heaven world. Every person after death has to pass through all the subplanes of the astral plane, on his way to the heaven world. But whether or not he is conscious on any or all of them, and to what extent, will depend upon the factors enumerated. For these reasons, it is clear that the amount of consciousness a man may possess on the astral plane, and the time he may spend there in his passage to the heaven world, may vary within very wide limits. There are some who pass only a few hours or days on the astral plane, others remain there for many years, or even centuries. For an ordinary person, 20 or 30 years on the astral plane after death is a fair average. An exceptional case is that of Queen Elizabeth, who had so intense a love for her country that she has only quite recently passed into the heaven world, having spent the time since her death in endeavoring, until recently almost without success, to impress upon her successors her ideas of what ought to be done for England. Another notable example was that of Queen Victoria, who passed very rapidly through the astral plane and into the heaven world, her swift passage being undoubtedly due to the millions of loving and grateful thought forms which were sent to her, as well as to her inherent goodness. The general question of the interval between Earth lives is complicated. It is possible here to touch briefly only on the astral portion of those intervals. For further details, the student is referred to The Inner Life, Volume 2, pages 458-474. A certain difference is produced by the mode of individualization, but this difference is much less in proportion in the lower classes. Those individualized through intellect tend to take an interval between lives rather longer than that taken by those who individualized in other ways. Page 125. Generally speaking, a man who dies young will have a shorter interval than one who dies in old age, but is likely to have a proportionately longer astral life, because most of the strong emotions which work themselves out in astral life are generated in the earlier part of the physical life. It must be recollected that in the astral world ordinary methods of time measurement scarcely apply. Even in physical life, anxiety or pain will stretch a few hours almost indefinitely, and on the astral plane this characteristic is exaggerated a hundredfold. A man on the astral plane can measure time only by his sensations. For a distortion of this fact has come the false idea of eternal damnation. We have thus seen that both, 1, the time spent, and, 2, the amount of consciousness experienced, on each level of the astral plane depend very largely upon the kind of life the man has led in the physical world. Another factor of great importance is the man's attitude of mind after physical death. The astral life may be directed by the will, just as the physical life may be. A man with little willpower or initiative is, in the astral as in the physical world, very much the creature of the surroundings which he has made for himself. A determined man, on the other hand, can always make the best of his conditions and live his own life in spite of them. A man, therefore, does not rid himself of evil tendencies in the astral world, unless he definitely works to that end. Unless he makes definite efforts, he will necessarily suffer from his inability to satisfy such cravings as can be gratified only by means of a physical body. In process of time, the desires will wear themselves out and die down simply because of the impossibility of their fulfillment. The process, however, may be greatly expedited as soon as the man realizes the necessity of ridding himself of the evil desires which detain him, and makes the requisite effort. A man who is ignorant of the true state of affairs usually broods over his desires, thus, page 126, lengthening their life, and clings desperately to the gross particles of astral matter as long as he can, because the sensations connected with them seem nearest to the physical life for which he still craves. The proper procedure for him, of course, is to kill out earthly desires and to withdraw into himself as quickly as possible. Even a merely intellectual knowledge of the conditions of astral life, and, in fact, of theosophical truths in general, is of inestimable value to a man in the after-death life. It is of the utmost importance that after physical death a man should recognize quite clearly that he is withdrawing steadily towards the ego, and that consequently he should disengage his thoughts as far as may be from things physical and fix his attention upon spiritual matters which will occupy him when, in due time, he passes from the astral plane into the mental or heaven world. By adopting this attitude he will greatly facilitate the natural disintegration of the astral body instead of unnecessarily and uselessly delaying himself upon the lower levels of the astral plane. Many people, unfortunately, refuse to turn their thoughts upwards, but cling to earthly matters with desperate tenacity. As time passes on, they gradually, in the normal course of evolution, lose touch with the lower worlds, but by fighting every step of the way they cause themselves much unnecessary suffering and seriously delay their upward progress. In this ignorant opposition to the natural course of things, the possession of a physical corpse is of assistance to a man, the corpse serving as a kind of fulcrum on the physical plane. The best remedy for this tendency is cremation, which destroys the link with the physical plane. A few typical examples of astral after-death life will best illustrate the nature and rationale of that life. An ordinary colorless man, neither specially good nor specially bad, is of course in no way changed by, page 127, death, but remains colorless.